Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Greetings from somewhere in Middle America. Hope you're all doing good tonight. We just had a beautiful day today. None of that thick, heavy humidity. It was probably sunny and 80 degrees and a beautiful day for the top down and just a little bit of pleasure. And I was talking to our guest tonight, and I think they probably have some of the most beautiful summers in the country. And we were maybe a little bit like them today, and so I think she brought me good luck. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest like tonight, and others will introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. The second part of the show is open mic and some great indie music sure to inspire. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, and you can like me at Facebook, my Facebook page, front/inaflash.org, and I would appreciate it because I really like you. I'm excited about our guest tonight. You know, we have discussions on Brain Injury Radio a lot about, is there anything one person can do? Is there anything we can do to change the course of, well, the way brain injury has been looked at or not looked at, probably more aptly the point, and how it's progressed or not progressed, what kind of quality and quantity of information the traditional medical model has had over the last decade, two decades. And, well, what we've discovered here on Brain Injury Radio, the largest peer-to-peer support group in the world, is that there's quite a few of you out there who have gone through a traumatic brain injury, and instead of stopping dead in your tracks, as many do, we get stuck when we find out we can't go back to the old me, yet in front of us is a huge dark void with a big question mark, and so we don't know what's in front of us. We know we can't go back to what's behind us at a point, and we're right there in the middle, and that's a pivotal point where we all need to make a decision. Of course, we're going to spend some time there in grief and just feeling our feelings and being. It is a place, you know, beginning, middle, end. Middle is always there, or future, I'll say in this case. But we do have to make a decision at some point, like I was talking about in the four A's, about what kind of action we're going to take moving forward. And tonight, my guest Carol, let me grab my sheet here, she is a great example, and she's going to tell us about her mentor and some other people that are in this group with her, but Maine is apparently setting the states ablaze with what they've been willing to do and were recognized for it recently. Carol Starr, MS, is the founder and facilitator of the Maine-based volunteer group Brain Injury Voices. Carol sustained a brain injury in a car accident in 1999, which changed her life dramatically. Due to ongoing mental fatigue, as well as sound, visual, and balance sensitivities, she couldn't return to her work as a teacher or to her hobby as a classical musician. Over the last 15 years, she's worked hard to learn strategies to compensate for her difficulties and to come to terms with a life forever changed. She's now created a new, independent, meaningful life as a brain injury educator, advocate, and peer mentor. Her inspirational keynote speech, "Never Give Up on Happiness," has been well received by brain injury survivors, medical professionals, and students. In 2010, Carol and national brain injury speaker author Bev Bryant formed the volunteer group Brain Injury Voices to give fellow survivors the opportunity to pay it forward and make a difference as educators, advocates, and mentors. Over the last 4 years, the 12 members of Voices have volunteered more than 6,000 hours. This year, the American Hospital Association recognized Voices' impact and awarded them their prestigious hospital award for volunteer excellence, the HAVE Award. Voices is the first brain injury volunteer group to receive this national honor. In May, 9 members of Voices and 3 support people traveled to Washington, D.C. to receive the award. To contact Carol and to learn more about Brain Injury Voices, check out her website at braininjuryvoices.org. But in the meantime, we're going to hear from the lady ourselves. Are you with us, Carol?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Loud and clear. How are you doing tonight? Is it a beautiful night in Maine?
Well, not so much. I think you got the good weather. We had basically fog and rain all day today.
Oh, no. Well, I tell you what, in a day or two, you're just going to have a drop-dead gorgeous day if it moves like it usually does. But I, as I mentioned to you before, I visited your state once before, and it was in a family vacation to New England, and I was just so impressed with Maine, wonderful place. And I think I mentioned my husband's mother's side of the family, mother and that side of the family are from Maine, and it just seems to be a wonderful state. But you guys, in many cases, hold kind of a low profile. Sometimes we don't hear a lot from you, except that you do have some fantastic lobster there. I'll tell you that. I remember that all the way back from that trip. But you guys have really been rattling the cages with your peer support. And so I wanted to kind of start at the beginning for the audience and tell a little bit about you, what you were doing prior to your brain injury, and then exactly what it was that happened to you, and a little bit about the course of your early recovery.
Absolutely, yes. Well, I can tell you who I was on July 5th, 1999, which was the day before my accident.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I was a teacher by profession, and I wasn't a classroom teacher or anything like that, but rather I would go into different businesses and teach all kinds of different courses for workers there, a lot of soft skill stuff, things like communication, train the trainer, basic listening. I used to say, I'll teach most anything other than math. Math is not my strong suit.
Me either. I'm with you there.
Yes. So basically, I would travel from company to company teaching different courses. I guess you could call me a consultant, although I just like to call myself a teacher because I've always been a teacher. No matter kind of where I go, I seem to find myself in a place where I can teach. I've always been like that. I also have been a classical musician since the age of 9. I was a violinist, and I played in an orchestra. I was also a singer. I sang in a chorale, and I was a happy amateur, never good enough to be a professional or anything like that, but I didn't want to be. I just loved to be an amateur. And there were people in the orchestra that I played in who were, you know, 80-something years old, and they were still playing their violins. And I figured that, you know, someday that's going to be me. I'm going to do this, you know, for the rest of my life. You know, little did I know how much everything was going to change.
Yes.
So what happened was on July 6th, 1999, and I actually just passed the 15-year anniversary a week and a half ago.
Yes.
And I can talk about how I deal with anniversaries later on if you'd like, because I have my own way of coping with that day.
Yeah, I'd like to.
I was going from one teaching job to another, and I was broadsided on the driver's side. My somebody going about 50 miles an hour or so. To this day, I have no idea where this person came from because I looked, and I didn't see anybody, but I got hit nonetheless. And the things that I remember right up to the point of impact. I remember this really loud sound of metal on metal.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened was all the windows in the car broke, airbags went off, car spun 180 degrees, ended up on the opposite side of the median. But I don't remember any of those things. I only know that they happened because I saw accident photos later on, which kind of told me a little bit of the story that I wasn't conscious before.
Right.
And by ambulance to the emergency room, where there they just diagnosed me with whiplash. And the interesting thing to me about it now and what I talk to medical professionals about when I tell my story is how much questions matter, because I don't think I was really asked the right questions in the emergency room. They said, did you hit your head? I said no. My head actually hurt, but somehow in my concussed state, I didn't think that, well, maybe I should mention that my head hurts. And if my head hurts,
right,
maybe I didn't hit it. I wasn't able to make that kind of connection with my brain being a little scrambled.
Mm-hmm.
They also asked, do you remember everything? I confidently answered yes. But I didn't even realize until weeks later. It was actually only because other people I knew told me about accidents they had been in, and people talked about remembering glass breaking and airbags going off and screeching brakes, and I realized that I had no memory of any of those things. And so I wish that they had asked, you know, what do you remember? Because maybe the brain injury would have gotten diagnosed a little sooner. It took about 6 weeks for the injury
to
be diagnosed.
Do you have your speakers on? Do you have your computer on too?
I do not, no.
Okay. It's probably Blog Talk Radio. I was just hearing a little bit of feedback. Maybe it's me. Let me switch around here. You know, that is an interesting point that you bring up, because when I was in the middle of my aneurysm, and of course, it, you know, my head was exploding and I had no idea what was going on, they questioned me too, and you're the first one I've ever heard bring that up before, but they asked me things like, if I was allergic to anything, and I felt like the questions they asked me, and this is right to your point, were ones that I felt like I should know. And so I guessed, and I told them I was allergic to peanut butter and bees. Well, that's not true at all. I'm, as far as I know, I'm not allergic to peanut butter, and as far as I know, I don't know whether I'm allergic to bees or not. I've never been stung, you know. And then they asked a number of other questions, like you're talking about, and I think, like you, my brain just wasn't really connecting, or I'm not sure, you know, who knows what's going on when you're in the middle of a brain crisis, but I too was answering those questions and feeling like I should know the answers. And I think you're right between them shining the flashlight in your eyeballs and asking you questions when you don't know if you're on foot or horseback, that's a very odd time, you know, to be asking, particularly someone with a brain injury whose chances of accuracy is, you know, isn't going to be real good right that minute, to be asking us those questions. Now, it's one thing if there was someone with us, you know, maybe they'd be able to answer the questions. But yeah, I think that particular protocol may not be such a good one, or they might need to change the questions that they're asking, like you're saying.
Yeah, just going from, you know, do you remember everything to what do you remember? Because I think that would have elicited the fact that I didn't remember very much about the accident.
Right,
and
the answer would have been a lot shorter.
Ambulance. Sorry, say again?
I said then your answer would have been a lot shorter.
don't remember much.
It
harmed me physically, but I know that it harmed me psychologically because I didn't understand, you know, okay, they let me go from the emergency room. I must be fine. Then when I started having these cognitive symptoms, I did not understand what was happening or why everything suddenly, just overnight, got so difficult. For one thing, the fatigue. I have never had mental fatigue like that. I mean, even my morning shower would exhaust me so much that I have to lay down right after my morning shower. So I had really bad hair days for the first year and a half or so.
Mm-hmm.
So lie down right away. I would nap four times a day, generally, in those early times. And
so did they let you out? I'm sorry. When you're in the emergency room and they're asking the questions, they don't really determine that you have a brain injury at that point? You're just kind of released?
Yeah, they let me go with the diagnosis of severe whiplash.
Okay, so that's it then. Well, that was all the further they went with it at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, so then you get home, and so obviously, no pun intended, you weren't given a heads up that whiplash could cause some of these things that you're describing right now, like the extreme fatigue and some of the changes you're going to go on to tell us about. Nobody really mentions that in the same sentence with whiplash. So you were truly sent out there, like way too many of us, without any indicators of what was coming down the road.
Exactly. Yes. And that was that surprise was one of the things that made the whole experience so very difficult, because I didn't know what was going on or what to expect. And I felt like I was going crazy early on. Like I said, the fatigue, and then also sound sensitivity. I couldn't figure out why everything sounded so much louder to me. For example, whenever a plane would go overhead, even if I was inside, I would literally duck because I thought it was coming into my house. I was actually on the verge of calling the airport because I was convinced that they had changed the flight patterns and that they were flying too low over my house. It never occurred to me that maybe I was the one who was hearing things incorrectly.
Okay.
And then just, go ahead. The emotions of everything, I would cry at the drop of a hat. Just whenever any plans would change, suddenly it got really hard to cook. It's a very strange thing, which I'm sure we all know, to remember doing a task, but then somehow you can't do it anymore. Like, I remember making dinner. Now everything seemed so complicated. And everything just got worse when I tried to go back to work. About 6 weeks after my accident was when I tried to return to work. And I was teaching a class, 2 hours. I had somebody actually helping me. And those 2 hours would put me on my couch for 2 days, just too exhausted to do anything. And I had trouble remembering my students' names. Every time anybody walked in the door, I asked them if they were new, because I couldn't remember from time to time.
Right.
And I would look at my lesson plan that I had written, and, I mean, I could read the words, but somehow I couldn't make sense of what I was supposed to do with my students. I would just stick them in groups and kind of leave them there because I had no idea what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was failing at my job. And then trying to go back to music. I will always remember the first music rehearsal that I tried to go back to. It was an orchestra rehearsal. We get there, and it sounded so loud to me. I opened up my violin case, and one of my strings had broken. And I looked at that. I mean, I've been changing violin strings for decades. And suddenly, I didn't know how to change a violin string. And my friend had to do it. Then I looked at the orchestra, and I didn't even know where to sit. I mean, I had the same seat for like 10 years. And it was confusing to me, where do I go? What do I do? And then trying to play a piece, which I actually had played before, I could read the music, but it just went by so fast and it was so loud that after literally 5 minutes, I couldn't take it anymore. And a friend had to drive me home. And then I spent more days on the couch after that. And you know, struggling at home as well, you know, with the cooking. I would go to the grocery store and just be overwhelmed by everything in there. I'd spend like half an hour in the produce aisle with like an apple in each hand, going, which apple do I buy?
I'm not laughing at you, laughing with you. I've done that, and not in the produce aisle, but that seems to be something common that we hear from survivors, and to try to explain that to a doctor and not wind up going to the shrink boneyard, getting relegated to the shrink boneyard is a toughie, you know. Yet I know that this is common with people who have had a brain injury because, you know, once again, now I'm hearing this, you know, and it seems to be pretty common. That grocery store deals a lot of us a fit, boy.
It is. It's sensory overload. And I had more than one medical professional tell me, well, take a Valium. And
yeah, that'll
I knew
help.
I didn't know what was the answer, but I knew that it didn't make any sense to me that I wasn't scared of the grocery store before my accident, and now I suddenly am. I knew something was wrong. And it took several years, but eventually I got to an eye doctor who did prism glasses for me. And all of my troubles in the grocery store pretty much disappeared with prism glasses.
That's wonderful. Can you tell a little bit, you're about the third person recently who's mentioned those, and just in case the audience isn't aware, I know you're not a scientist, but can you tell a little bit about those prism glasses, what they were designed to do, and how they helped you?
Yes, absolutely. From what I know from my eye doctor, you know, vision problems are, like he said, 90% of people with brain injuries have them. And regular eye doctors don't diagnose this. You go to a regular eye doctor, they check your eyes, your visual acuity, everything looks fine. But I guess they call them behavioral optometrists or neuro-optometrists have specialized tests that they do. And one thing that they look at is where your midline is. For example, he would take what looked like a wand with a ball on the end, and he'd say, and he'd move it across my visual field and say, tell me when the ball is right in front of your nose. And when I thought that ball was right in front of my nose, it was actually like 3 or 4 inches to my left.
Wow.
So my whole visual field had shifted to the left. So I thought center was to the left, which explained why whenever I would fall, I would always go left, because my brain thought that center was somewhere over there. And the prism helped to move your center back. I also just learned this part recently. When I walk, I tilt backwards, and I use my hands to balance myself. I had no idea that I was doing that, but this eye doctor watched me walk recently, and he said, yep, you're doing that. And so my prisms correct the left side visual shift as well as the going backwards. And, you know, it's made the grocery store. It's actually even made the sound sensitivity better for me, and I think that's because my brain just has more energy to deal with sound. He also told me that for me, my straight-ahead vision worked and my peripheral vision worked, but they'd forgotten how to work together. And so my brain was giving me all funky signals whenever I would go into somewhere where there was like a lot of visual stimulation, and I would overload. And of course I couldn't make any decisions, or you know, I'd stand with the apples in each hand and not know what to do because my brain had just overloaded. And so the prisms helped those two systems to relearn how to work together. He also gave me visual exercises to do, which helped a lot.
That's pretty wild that something could be that far off and that just a regular eye doctor wouldn't pick up on any abnormality at all. But makes me want to go see a neuro-ophthalmologist and have one as a guest on the show, because I've heard this a few times and I've got visual issues as well. And mine a lot of times with depth perception kind of things, and
I have
that too.
I think things are closer than they really are.
Right.
I screamed
right.
a lot in the car, Dave. I scared a lot of people when I was riding.
Yeah. Yeah, I still
I learned
do that.
Somebody else is driving. I just Carol, close your eyes because I can't judge the distance, so I just close my eyes.
Right. Well, that's that's really something. Well, I'm glad that those prism glasses have helped. And if there's people out there in the audience, do check out a neuro-ophthalmologist. I'm sure that they have a database in each state. If you look that up, I'm sure they're certified neuro-ophthalmology, that there would be a page of people.
It's called the Neuro-Optometrist Rehabilitation Association. It's called NORA for short. And
okay.
I don't know what their website is, but I know it's called NORA.
All right. Great.
A list like eight of, because there aren't very many of them. Most eye doctors don't do this kind of optometry. I mean, I think there's
right.
only one or two in the whole Spain that do this. And
now
I feel very lucky.
Definitely. But okay, so now that didn't come a little late. We jumped ahead because I got really interested in that because I always think of the karmic end of things, and I've heard of that a few times now. And I tripped and fell last night and just about broke my arm. And now I've heard a few times about this, and I'd really like to know more about it. But back to your story, so you're going through just hell basically in your early time after the accident because you've had all these changes, your hobby, your job, your emotions, the sensory overload. And in your case, I wanted to reemphasize, because a lot of people talk about sensory overload, and some of the guests have talked about tendonitis, that kind of a thing. But for you, that's not what it was. It was actually like hearing regular noise going on around you with the volume cranked all the way up to the point that it nearly made you snap. It was so loud. And that's kind of what was going on, well, in many of your examples, but when you went back to music, the orchestra suddenly sounded like the volume was blaring. And so all these weird things happening to you that you had never experienced before in all the activities that had been familiar. So at that point, as these things are continuing to go on or unfold, did you go back to a doctor at that point and say, hey, I think there's something a little more than whiplash going on? Had you tied it to your accident in your own mind? What happened?
Well, yes. Actually, the person who recognized first that I had a brain injury was actually my massage therapist, who's also a physical therapist. Because by that point, I was seeing a physical therapist, you know, for the physical injuries from the accident, and he was kind of reaching the same conclusions at the same time my massage therapist did, that there's more going on here than just soft tissue injury. And they talked to my primary care doctor, you know, who kind of yes, you've had a brain injury, but at that point, figuring it's going to get better, but it didn't get better. I kept trying over and over again to go back to work. I never managed more than about 10 hours a week, and that would just do me in. I never even managed like a full day. I could do a couple hours, then I'd like collapse on the couch for a couple of days, do another couple hours. But people kept telling me, well, it should get better, but it just didn't. Then eventually I went to see a neurologist, and that was one of the worst experiences of my life, sadly. Can I say bad language on the radio? But I'd like to tell you what he told
me. If you're quoting him, yes.
He said, get off your ass and get a job.
The neurologist.
Yes, those were his exact words.
I was going to say, I haven't noticed, and it's just me. I'm sure there's a lot of fine neurologists out there, but none that I've run into. First of all, it took me many, many years to ever get to that point. And when I went and described some of the things like you're describing to him, he looked at me like I was crazy, like that was the first time he had ever heard it. And I thought, what is it a neurologist does, by the way? You know, I mean, I guess I had more of an expectation because, like a lot of us, each time we go to a new doctor or find a new discipline, more holistic discipline or whatever, you know, it gets our hopes up, you know, and I think we go in with some level of expectation or at least desire, you know, that this is going to be one of the keys to the kingdom for us to help, you know, answer these things that have plagued us and that we haven't gotten a chance to identify or get validated about. And then you go in and get a letdown like that. And I mean, we're feeling pretty crappy in the first place, or we wouldn't be seeking out help like this, whether it's in the traditional medical model or holistic or wherever it is. If we were feeling like $1 million, we wouldn't be out looking. So I do find it kind of incredulous that, you know, we go to a place to feel better, and not only, you know, many times do we not feel better, but we actually feel worse because they don't produce a treatment that's going to make us feel better, but they do undermine our confidence and our esteem and whatever else is going on with us, in addition to that, and drag us down even further. So I'm sorry that that happened. So he really wasn't getting it at all. So he must not have worked with many brain injuries.
And that comment literally took me years to get over. Even once I had found a treatment team that really, you know, understood me, understood my injury, still every single appointment I would go to, is this real? Am I making this up? And they say, yes, Carol, it's real. No, you're not making it up. I needed constant reassurance because I doubted myself so much because I kept thinking that, well, okay, if I just try harder, I can make this go away by sheer force of will. And I've got a lot of gumption, but nothing I did could make it go away. And the more I tried, it seemed like the worse it got. And eventually you realize with help of family that I had to stop trying to go back to work because that wasn't getting me anywhere and that I needed more help, and found my way to an outpatient brain injury rehab clinic, which was just wonderful to finally be somewhere where they understood my injury and what was happening, and I could actually start on therapies that were going to help me to deal with it. But of course, still at that point, because it was nearly a year before I really received any brain injury rehab. I had received like physical therapy. I was seeing an osteopath, you know, for the physical stuff from the car accident. But it took nearly that year to get any brain injury rehab, and that was literally the worst year of my life, most definitely, because it was so bewildering in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so then,
wow.
then, you know, working with you know, an occupational therapist, a speech therapist, and a counselor, and really working to come to terms with everything. Because, of course, it takes all of us such a long time to wrap our heads around the fact that we're not who we were before.
Right.
And
right.
You mentioned
yeah.
grieving that loss. It is it is a heck of a grieving process. You know,
well, it
is,
and you don't even get to start until you realize what's going on. That's what I kind of resent about it. I mean, you took a year before you were actually getting treated for a brain injury. Before that, I think the word you used, bewilderment, was a good one, but that doesn't even really count pulling the trigger on grief. I mean, it does in a way, but that's really a time of discovery of what you've lost. You know, and for some people, that's months, and for some people, it's a year. For some people, you know, it's almost a couple decades, you know, a decade and a half until that time comes. And so the grief can't even really start until, you know, you realize what you've lost, how you've lost it, till you can make some sense of it, till people can start putting it together for you, like you were starting to experience in rehab, you know, where someone actually understood what you were going through and was able to explain it for you and then give you that affirmation and validation you needed for you to fully come to grips with what you were going to be grieving.
Yes. Yes, and at first, everybody kept telling me, you need to use strategies, Carol, and oh, how I hated that word, like a lot of survivors, because I felt like if I used strategies to get things done, that was like letting the brain injury win, that like so many of us, you get very focused on, I have to get back to who I was, but, you know, brain injury, it beat me down badly, because mm-hmm. I just couldn't do things the way that I used to do, even though I tried so many times. And eventually I think I just got tired enough that I said, all right, well, I'll try the strategy thing. And finally starting to have some success with strategies was really the start of building myself back up. And for me, the first really real success I had was working with my occupational therapist, kind of re-getting control of my living space, and particularly my meals. For some reason, early on after my injury, I have no idea why, I got quite fixated on cottage cheese. And that's pretty much what I ate for dinner most nights.
Wow.
Because I didn't know what else to eat. I also, at one point, had an entire shelf full of Italian dressing and barbecue sauce, because every time I go to the store, I'd think I needed more.
Mm.
But I forget that I already had it. I think, and I don't remember thinking this, but I think my thought process was that I was going to marinate things. So I needed Italian dressing and barbecue sauce to do that. But then I wouldn't buy meat to marinate it. But I remember the Italian dressing and barbecue sauce.
Right.
So I need.
And you weren't really cooking then either. So you just had a collection of condiments. That's kind of what my refrigerator looks like. Beverages and condiments, that big white cold box.
Yeah, for a while early on, when we were working on the strategies, I had a note on my grocery list. Do not buy Italian dressing or barbecue sauce.
Most people
so much-
have the list of things they need. You put down the list of stuff not to buy. Wow.
And so I worked with the occupational therapist. She came to my house, and I now have a six-week rotating menu plan. So I could literally tell you what I'm eating for dinner 6 weeks from tonight.
Wow.
And I still use that strategy all these years later. Because I couldn't seem to decide what to eat and then make it all in the same evening. By the time I had decided what to eat and figured out, done those preparations, I had lost the energy to actually execute the plan. So
right.
The menu took all of that deciding out of it, that I just knew what I was going to eat. And then in the afternoon after my rest, I'd get up and I would do my cutting and chopping for whatever I was going to make. And that made a huge difference in terms of feeling like, okay, I can still do something. At least I could make dinner for myself. And I started to realize that having success with a strategy feels a heck of a lot better than failure without them.
Yes, and so absolutely.
Less resistant to the strategies as I started to have success with that. It also kind of worked on strategies for being out in the world and visiting with family and friends. And we had this thing we called my circle of recovery, and I still use it to this day. Kind of the innermost part of the circle is home, and I have to make sure that home works before I can work on being out in the world with family or friends or doing anything beyond that. And it's still true now. When home starts to fall apart for me, everything falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I judge I'm doing too much, when home starts to not work so well.
That's interesting. That must be what I've been going through moving even in the last couple of months, because home wasn't working. It wasn't even familiar. You know, when you pack everything in boxes and things aren't laid out in an order that you're used to, and then you move to an unfamiliar place and try to get acclimated to that. I think, you know, home has always been my sanctuary, and to have chaos on both ends of it, it was like really dealing me fits, you know, as far as being able to, I need that chill out, quiet, whether it's taking a nap or just retreating into silence, you know, kind of a place. And one of the things I wanted to mention that you and I talked about before, and then we'll go on with your story. Let's remember you're an occupational therapist in these strategies. But we were talking earlier about one of the things a lot of us experience early on, and just so if anyone else is feeling that out there, we know that they're not, they'll know that they're not crazy. But we were talking about how before the brain injury, we might know on Saturday there were three events going on, and, you know, maybe a relative's baptism in the morning and somebody's birthday party in the afternoon and a big dance and concert going on that evening. And we would go and we wouldn't even think about it and think of, wow, that's a lot of stuff in a day, but how exciting, you know, and you go from one thing to the other and you live your life. And then all of a sudden you get to this place where, first of all, you see that calendar with three things landing on it, and you break out into a cold sweat at that instant just to see that these things you'd all like to do are overwhelming because they're all on the same day. And then we kind of have to go through and think about, and this is another weird way of thinking as far as trying to explain this to somebody like that neurologist, is saying, you know, I actually have to pick one of those things that I want to do most if I'm going to be able to do any at all based on what else might be going on in my life at that time. And then I actually measure how much it's going to cost me in days after as far as my fatigue or the flaring of other residuals, you know, getting to me worse, like the sensory overload or the full basket syndrome or the short-term memory. You know, when we get that over-fatigued, sometimes those residuals flare worse. So to take a schedule that was a quote-unquote ordinary person's schedule and suddenly you have to start weighing and measuring what, if any, of those things we're going to be able to do, and think in terms of how much that's going to cost us in brain bucks and fatigue bucks and everything else, is really a shocking, disappointing way to have to live. And then to try to explain it to somebody, I think a lot of us, at least I know I did, and I've heard of some others that did, who didn't run into the kind of therapy that you did or run into a peer support group, is we simply quit talking. Because, you know, you try to explain that the first few times and get what I quote unquote the look from people, and feel like you're not being believe, not only are you not being validated or understood, but you're not being believed, and you just stop talking about it. And that chases you further into the isolation, and again, further into a lot of those residuals, like the emotion regulation and isolating, and maybe not even going out and picking out one of those things to do, just saying, you know, screw it, I don't even want to have to worry about whether or not I'm going to be in bed the next 24, 48 hours. I'm just not going to bother going at all. And those can be very vulnerable, dangerous places for people to be if they land there for too long. But I just wanted to bring that up because when you were talking about symptoms earlier that, you know, before you were even really diagnosed, we were talking about the fatigue, and that was one of the elements of the fatigue. One of the things before I got to Brain Injury Radio and that couple, 17 years I spent without ever having met another survivor or support group or doctor that knew what was going on, is just I thought that I was terminally unique, you know, and kind of a hopeless case, and just needed to hide it, you know, and try to be as quote unquote ordinary seeming as I could be when I was out. But I was single for most of my life. So, you know, when I went home alone most of those nights, you know, that's when the emotion would come out and the reality would come out. And, you know, the sleeping, I'd even make things up, you know, like the day after about a busy schedule that I had, which was a reason I wasn't going to be able to communicate people, when in fact I was sleeping all that day.
Yes, I would get lots of people early on would say, oh, geez, I wish I could take a nap every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think I would anything not to have to take all these naps every day.
Right, exactly. I wish I didn't have to. You know, I used to have a pretty busy life before. This wasn't really anything anybody gets up and plans on. Gee, I think it would be fun to have to weigh and measure all the activities that I used to take for granted and have to lay down and take naps throughout the day, stop what I'm doing or not do what I want to do because I've got to deal with those things. So you get to the occupational therapist and she starts giving you some strategies you reluctantly at first bought into, but then found that they were helping. And I think that's very important that you find the right place that can give you some of those tips. I'm watching that now with my dad in rehab for Parkinson's, and there's some simple things that they're showing him that just aren't things that people innately know when they've never had those kind of issues, whatever your issues are before. So it's great to go in and finally find some folks that know what they're talking about to the extent that they can give you some of those strategies that help you move forward, or like you said, gave you back between the prism glasses and some of those strategies, you got some of your time back because it made a few of those tasks easier, so you didn't have to get quite as fatigued as when you were trying to figure it out all on your own.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Definitely. And I think that, you know, that time was really about getting to know myself as a brain injury survivor. What can my brain do? What can't my brain do? And, you know, I would goof a lot because I still tend to overestimate what my brain can do.
Mm.
But particularly early on, that would result in me getting driven home from a lot of places. I like to say that my car has spent more nights away from home than I have. Because so many people have had to drive me different places, because I would think, well, of course I could do this. And then I would get somewhere, and I get this feeling of pressure in my head as my head gets tired. It gets hard
mm-hmm.
to talk. I'll eventually fall. And then I don't know quite where I am or what to do, and somebody has to take over. And that used to happen in the early days a lot. It happens quite a bit less frequently now. But in those early days, I did. Lots of people had to drive me home, or I have napped in lots of strange places. I tell people that I sleep around because I nap in so many weird places.
Well, your girl's got to do what a girl's got to do, right?
Exactly. I think, and finding some humor in it, because I was starting to find humor in it. That was also around the time when I decided to name the brain injury. I call her Brain Hilda.
Oh, God. Brain Hilda. That's funny.
Yep. Because it feels like there's another person inside me. Like there's me and then there's a brain injury. So I figure, well,
right.
let's give that a name. So I call Brain Hilda the diva in my head who gets what she wants when she wants it.
Yeah, the spoiled one. Now, what was it earlier that you were gonna explain, and I said I'd like to hear it when we got to that? Yeah, that was it. Tell us about that. How do you celebrate your anniversary since you just had one?
Mm-hmm. Well, for the first, I don't know, probably 4 to 5 years, I hated July 6th every year. Starting in June each year, I start to think about who I was, you know, the year before, or 2 years before, or 3 years before, and I feel sad about what I couldn't do. It was a day to mourn, a day to feel bad about all the things that I couldn't do. And then I don't quite even remember exactly how this came about, but I started to think a little bit differently about it. I said, you know, I got a new life on that day. It's kind of like my second birthday.
Right.
So, a new life on that day, why don't I commemorate that by doing something new, something I have never done before? Doesn't have to be big, but just has to be new. And then I can plan for it during the month of June, and that gives me something to think about besides what was I doing before my accident.
Now, that's cool.
Gave me something to look forward to. I mean, the first year that I did this, all it was I went to a restaurant with a friend that I'd never been to before, and I ordered a dish I had never had. Over the years, things have gotten more and more complex as my recovery has continued. A week and a half ago, I was in New Hampshire with my family, and we took the gondola up to Wildcat Mountain. I kind of like the symbolism of being on top of a mountain, since I've been kind of climbing a mountain for the last 15 years.
Right.
And took pictures.
Boy, that sounds like a good one.
Mm-hmm. So I actually love my anniversary day now.
That's a neat concept. I've heard of people that have, you know, like a birthday party for a second birth on the day, but I kind of like your idea of trying something new. I'm always trying to get people to do that in the course of recovery anyway. So many people are afraid to try something new because they're afraid they might quote unquote fail, or they won't be good at it, or we've got all the reasons why not. But you've given a good reason why, and your anniversary is a really good time to do that. And like you said, you can start out slow, but certainly there's things that you've thought about doing, dreamed about doing, and that's a very good day to commemorate not only your new life, but new activities that avail themselves to you in that new life. So that's a pretty, pretty cool idea. Awesome. Well, thanks
and
for sharing that.
Certainly, yes. I mean, by design, those new activities have to be doable.
Right.
So I would say I'm going to go to a music rehearsal because that's not doable for me. There's no point in trying that. So it really is coming up with things that are doable for me on any given year.
Right, because that'd probably be the last year you'd do it if it turned out like that. So have reasonable expectations and plans out there when you're doing it, definitely. But okay, so coming back now, I'm sorry.
That is part of the process of learning to live with brain injury is developing reasonable expectations of oneself. You know, what
yes.
can I do and what can't I do? And it is a lot of
yes.
trial and error at the beginning because you just don't know.
Right. Well, and I share, like you said, that I still overstretch my reach sometimes and certainly a lot better at it than in the beginning when I had no idea that I even had new boundaries, you know. And so I do a lot better at it now, but it is something to become aware of, you know, learning your new boundaries and not over pushing it, or you have that payback. But I want to make sure, because I know you were on late time, and I don't want to wear you out too much, but I do want to get to the point where we talk a little bit about, now you're getting the strategies, you're in occupational therapy, you've finally been diagnosed as having a brain injury, you're getting some treatment to make life a little more palatable. Where did a support group come in from there after you finally were diagnosed and started getting treatment? And when did you meet Beverly? And tell us a little bit about Beverly Bryant. There might be some people out in the audience who are aware of Beverly, who I'm sorry, passed in January, was it this year?
Yes. I actually met Bev at the rehab facility, the first one that I went to. And while I was there, they encouraged me to go to a support group, and I went to one, and I walked in, and I was honestly completely overwhelmed at first, because at that point in my injury, I couldn't take listening to other people's injuries, other people's stories. It didn't help me. It overwhelmed me.
Mm-hmm.
So I never went back to that particular support group. And there was nothing wrong with the support group. It was just where I was in my own process.
Sure.
So I was at that point in a small kind of treatment group, and one person and I became friends, and we decided that we were going to meet for lunch once a month. So that was kind of my peer mentoring. She was a little further along in the brain injury process than I was, and I could handle that one-on-one. And so I needed that for peer support, the one-on-one, before I was ready to do a group. And then I met Bev when I was just at this rehab facility, because she was a peer counselor there, because her injury was, you know, about 10 years older than mine. And she really encouraged me in my writing. And I've always been someone who likes to write. And I did start to write about the brain injury eventually, mostly in poems at first, as a way mm-hmm. to kind of make of my experience. And I had written a poem called Phoenix, which she really liked. And she published those in a book of client writings that she put together. I can actually read you the poem if you'd like.
Yes, I was going to say, do you happen to have it handy? We'd love to hear it.
I do, yes. It's called Phoenix. At the end of my street, on the edge of the marsh, stands a tree. She does more than stand. She commands your attention. Full of her fall flash, no ordinary red, orange, and yellow for her. She sparkles with crimson, magenta, umber, and ochre plumage, a rising phoenix with outstretched wings, confident and bold. But her time is brief. Perhaps her colors burn too brightly. Her plumage dulls, darkens, and drops, exposing frail gray bones, pale and naked. Who is she now? The tree will have her time again. Will I?
Beautiful.
And that poem scared the heck out of me, because I really had no idea what my answer was to that last question. Because I didn't know. Was I going to have a time again? Was I going to be anything again, or was I just going to be a professional patient for the rest of my
right.
life? And it actually took a couple years. Go ahead.
No, I'm just agreeing. Yeah, go on.
But I eventually wrote a companion poem to that. It took about 5 years. And this one's called Phoenix Revisited, where I answer that last question.
Oh, good.
This one goes, at the end of my street, on the edge of the marsh, stands that same tree. The haunting, hoping desire. The tree will have her time again. Will I? Finally answered with a quiet confidence. No. for that is the wrong question. I am no longer that tree. I'm a new being on a new journey. Spinning, sailing, falling, flailing, writhing, wailing, landing in my own soft space. Safe to root and to rise, to live this new time.
Wow, you learned a lot in 5 years, huh?
Yes.
Beautiful. They're both beautiful. And
thank
so
you.
Beverly was with you through that journey, or at least someone that you considered your mentor, encouraging you to write. And I might mention real quick, just since I'm on your page, for some of the audience that may or may not have heard before, and maybe in one of these books is the poem, but again, braininjuryvoices.org, which I'll type in the chat in a minute, is the website you want to check out here. And I looked here at the Beverly Bryant books, and In Search of Wings. Well, first of all, the site, you guys say, before her death, Beverly requested that Brain Injury Voices take over selling her two books. We're proud to continue her legacy and ensure that others can read her words and benefit from her inspirational story. Proceeds from the sale of these books will be used to further Brain Injury Voices' mission to educate, advocate, and support. And In Search of Wings is Beverly's true story of coping with brain injury and a stroke, her determination to conquer her physical and cognitive deficits to regain total independence will inspire survivors and professionals alike. And her book, To Wherever Oceans Go, her story of coping with brain injury and stroke, focuses on her struggle to return to meaningful employment following formal rehabilitation. And perspectives are written by family, friends, and medical professionals that enrich her story as a person who refused to set limits on her potential. So it sounds like you had a wonderful mentor who was very much not sitting in her soup and taking the action to move forward. So was it Beverly then that Beverly then was the co-founder along with you eventually for Brain Injury Voices. Is that correct?
Yes, because back in 2006, by that point I had changed rehab facilities because of a change in insurance. And by that point I was ready for a support group, and they had one there. And the staff person who was leading the support group knew that I was a teacher. She had read some of my writings. She knew that I had spoken at one conference at that point. I had actually read just the first Phoenix poem. At that point, I hadn't yet written the second one. And she said to me, Carol, she said, why don't we do a workshop? And, you know, I'll help, and let's put this together. And she said, let's call Bev. Let's see if she wants to come and be part of it. And so I spoke at this workshop, and Bev came and she spoke. And at that point, Bev had retired, and she was pretty much thinking that she was done. But she told me after, she said, you know, I came and I saw you guys were such a special support group, and you were doing this workshop and beginning to do wonderful things. She said, I had to be part of this. And so she started coming to support group meetings. So then in 2008, it was time. We decided, let's do another workshop. And so we did another workshop where I spoke at it, several people. We did a panel discussion. After that, I was asked to do a keynote at the main brain injury conference, and because she was part of that committee. And then in 2010, she and I got together and said, you know, I think it's time to form something more solid, more formal, because we realized that there were a lot of people in the support group that we were running that, you know, they really didn't need support as much anymore, but they were ready for to be educators, advocates, and mentors. And Beth had run a group like this before, and I had never done anything like this before. And honestly, the only reason I kind of agreed to do it was because I knew that I had Bev as my mentor, and she would kind of help you guide the process.
Mm-hmm.
I feel so lucky to have had her to help us get started. And one of the most amazing things that I think happened early on for that, for Brain Injury Voices, was we've been a group for a couple of months, and she said, I want us to do 4 workshops and the closing keynote at the main brain injury conference. And you knocked all of us over when she said that. She had a wonderful way of thinking big. And as a group, even after her death, Voices has continued that thinking big thing.
And did you do that?
Pardon me?
And did you do that at that first conference?
We did. We did 4 workshops and the closing keynote. We worked at it for several months, and I think for any survivor, setting a big goal, but a doable goal, I mean, that's key. It's got to be doable. And, you know,
right.
Could we have pulled that together in a month? No. We needed, like, you know, 4 or 5 months to pull all of that together, but that's okay.
Sure.
Because that kind of time, we worked at it, we came together as a group, and we realized just how powerful the survivor voice could be in realizing that we wanted to do more, to continue to use our voices as survivors to help other people, and mm-hmm. really developed our mission, which is to educate, you know, medical professionals about this injury, kind of from the survivor point of view. We wanted to be able to advocate for how important it is for survivors to get rehab therapies, because many of them have stories just like mine, where they didn't find their way to the appropriate rehab for too long a period of time. And we want to do what we can to help people to get the help that they need faster. And then to assist other survivors through peer mentoring, because we know how powerful it is when you can talk to somebody else who's been through the same thing. And so each year our projects have gotten bigger and bigger. You know, that first year we did the 4 workshops and the closing keynote. And then we did more workshops at the rehab facility where most of us were patients. And then we said, you know, we've done a lot of workshops. Let's put on our own conference. So in 2013, we put on our own day-long conference for survivors and families, had 2 tracks. And we started to do some fundraising and say, well, we want to raise some money for brain injury-related causes that are important to us. Realizing that we want more survivors to be able to go to, like, the main brain injury conference. We want to support, you know, art and music and some of those kind of adjunctive things that have been so helpful to so many of us as survivors. And then
right. We
last year, we had learned about the HAV Award, the Hospital Award for Volunteer Excellence from the American Hospital Association. And we actually applied back in 2011 for the first time and did not get it. But Bev and I talked and decided, you know what, let's wait a few years. We'll apply again. So we applied and then found out at the end of January that we had actually won it. And the amazing and sad part was that, you know, Bev and Rory, another Voices member, and I were instrumental in writing the actual application. And I saw Bev the day before she died, which was also my birthday. And I said to her, Bev, when you get there, if you could, put in a good word for us about the HAV Award. 6 days later, we won that National Volunteer Award.
Wow. And I'm sure she was looking down, applauding.
Yes, I have no doubt. And we decided kind of in her honor, because she was such a wonderful person to think big, that, I mean, the award paid for me to go to Washington, D.C., and accept, but we decided that we wanted as many of us from the group to go as possible. So we embarked on a very ambitious fundraising campaign from the end of January to the end of April to raise enough money for as many members of Voices to go to Washington as wanted to. So it ended up that 9 members of Voices and 3 support people were able to go because of all the fundraising that we did. And it wasn't just about receiving this National Volunteer Award, but we decided that the whole trip was really about extending our mission to educate, advocate, and support. So we met with the Brain Injury Association of America, a group toward Walter Reed National Military Hospital. We also met with our senator and representative. So the whole trip was just all about our mission and kind of bringing our mission to another audience, to a national audience. And it was
wow.
It was the trip of a lifetime for our entire group.
I was going to say, in a relatively short time, you guys really ballooned up. I just wanted to read, you've mentioned some of these things, but as far as the mission statement of educate, advocate, and support, under educate, develop brain injury workshops, participate on brain injury panels, offer organizational, educational, professional keynote presentations, seek out guest speakers for brain injury support groups when needed, attend service trainings in areas of members' interest or expertise. Then under advocate, connect with inpatient and outpatient brain injury clinical teams, participate in provider and community-based organizations, offer information on brain injury to various government, professional, and educational organizations. Under support, provide peer visits for inpatient brain injury survivors, provide peer support for outpatient brain injury survivors, mentor new members of brain injury support groups, and use technology to connect with other brain injury survivors. And Skype, didn't you do a Skype conference as well?
Well,
we
use Skype if somebody can't come to a meeting, if they
mm-hmm.
can Skype in. We also have a Facebook group for the support group as well as for Voices. We developed our website. I learned more about web technology than I ever thought I would know.
Yeah. Boy, didn't we all on that. Well, it's really amazing when people wonder if there's something that they can do or I can't do anything. What am I going to do? The comments that I hear, people just being afraid to make that effort or thinking that they're not going to make a difference. And when you said earlier, you made the comment about some people were kind of but didn't need quite the support element that they needed in the beginning, but still needed involvement and growth, as they were moving forward. And that comes in the form of peer-to-peer support, because when you get to a certain point in your own recovery, and I consider myself to have committed myself to a lifetime of recovery, so for my own personal sake, I hope I'm always growing and evolving, but then the gift of being able to pass that on to others who've been out there a short time or a long time without knowing how to tap those resources. I just think it's wonderful what you're doing. And, our Tuesday host, Les Paul Morgan, we were talking about it the other night and just saying that we're two or more gather. And it seems that when that happens with groups like yours, and his is a very active peer mentoring group, as is Craig's up in Washington State, that so much gets accomplished to help not only the newcomers and educate the neuroprofessionals, but gives the survivor a way to evolve in their own recovery beyond just the, and I say it affectionately because we have to do it, but the more self-centered part, which is learning how we function in the new me. But
yes, that's a
necessary when
step.
We give it away.
I went to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
But then eventually it's like, okay, I'm functioning pretty well, but maybe I still can't work. So now what do I do? And
right.
Voices people an opportunity, you know, to come together as a group. And I know for myself, I mean, I was 32 at the time of my accident, so I was, you know, fairly young in my career.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get a chance to build anything. And, you know, through Voices, I get a chance to build something. You know, and I still can't hold a full-time job. You know, I can do Voices, you know, 10 to 12 hours a week is about my max. I've done more, but it gets kind of unpretty for
sure.
me. But I feel like I have a career doing this. I feel
mm-hmm.
like I found my life. And that feels just so meaningful and wonderful to me. And it's not the way I would have expected to find my life's work, but that's what it is. And it took about 12 or 13 years for me to say this, but honestly now, if I had a time machine and I could go back and to July 6, 1999 and change it, I don't know if I would, because I like who I am. I like what I'm doing. I don't like the disability. I don't like the limitations that it puts on me. But if that's what it takes for me to get to this place, then okay. It took me a long time to be able to do that.
No, I bet it did. But I also can understand what you're saying about a renewed sense of purpose, you know,
mm-hmm.
and being able to spread hope. That's kind of, I think, at least the way this host feels about being here on Brain Injury Radio. And, you know, there was that, like I said, the dark hole with the big question mark at the end at one point. And when I landed here, I suddenly, not right at first, it took me a minute to acclimate to, like you say, the new technology just coming out. You know, I hadn't really come out before, because as I mentioned, I didn't have the opportunity to do that peer group support or anything like that, and hadn't found the right doctors or therapies. And so I had just kind of shut up. And when I got here and listened for a long time before, I mean, obviously I was talking as the host, but I've learned more from my guests and other hosts in the last 2.5 years than I learned in the 17 years prior to that on my own. And being able to come and provide a forum for people like you to talk about the amazing things that you're doing, and to have our audience be able to come in and talk about what's on their mind and feel that there is a peer support out there, whether they have one in their town or their mobility doesn't allow them to get there, that they can turn on 7 nights a week to Brain Injury Radio, and we have over 900 shows and archives now. And so really any time of the day or night, a person from any state in the union or 36 different countries can tune into Brain Injury Radio and is going to hear, well, I believe, you know, the fact that they get there, and depending on what they select, they're going to hear something in that they needed to hear. And one of them is what I was talking about earlier, that they're not terminally unique. There's a lot of people out there that have been going through the same thing, and they're talking about how they learned to cope with it. And then my pat answer is always, take what you like and leave the rest, you know, because we all put together a recovery plan for ourselves, with or without medical professionals involved. But I think we all make decisions of what the combination is going to be for our particular recovery plan, and that's going to change and evolve over time. And we do have some control over that. And I think one of the things that really got to me in the beginning is I felt like I was out of control. And being able to have a mission statement, as you do in Voices and I get to hear, you know, not only helps build the confidence and the self-esteem again, but gives a renewed sense of purpose. And it also, I don't know about you, but there was a time in my life that I thought a person's definition had a lot to do with what they did for a living, meaning that they were earning money for it, and that somehow the amount of money that you were earning or not earning had something to do with the definition of who you were as a person. And what I'm finding out here is that that's not necessarily the case. There's a lot of us out here working on what I call, I was going to say not big bucks, but soul bucks. And that those are even more rewarding because we're really connecting with other people and we're not money driven, which there's nothing wrong with people out making a great income that have a great job and doing what they're doing. I'm not putting that down at all. I did that, and there was a time in my life for a couple and a half decades where that was the path I was on, and that's what I was supposed to be doing. But I feel equally that, you know, where I've been the last couple and a half years was a very integral part of my long-term journey and something that I needed, you know, that I must have needed in my life that I wasn't getting out of that first 25 years. It took what it took. Like you said, you don't know whether if you could turn back the clock, if you would change things or not. I know I wouldn't be doing this. I don't know about turning the clock back thing. Those aneurysms really hurt. But Les talked about that last night too, how much pain it is. But I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. I wouldn't be having the opportunities that I'm having now if that wouldn't have happened. And I couldn't be happier with that part of my life right now. And the forum that I've been given to try to help people. So I really applaud you at what you've been doing. Again, folks, that's braininjuryvoices.org, and be sure to check them out. And if anyone wants to call in and has a question or a comment for Carol, the number is 424-243-9540. And if toll-free in the U.S., 855-473-3711. Toll-free outside the U.S., 202-559-7907. And press 1 if you have any question or comment, like I say. And I just think that it's wonderful that you're doing what you've been doing, Carol. And you even, you know, there's a lot of people who, you know, I noticed your staff, and we won't go into everybody else right now who's working with you. People can check that out on the website. But the other thing that you did, and I think, well, just you and your own fortitude, but your mentor, is that when she went away, voices didn't go away. And I think that's another very important part of peer-to-peer support, is that whoever creates the machine in the first place, one of the most important things you can do, I think, is find the people that are going to be able to carry on that mission statement if something happens to you. Because one thing that we all know here, and you mentioned it earlier, is that none of us has any guarantees, and there's no certainty you know, that we're going to have a tomorrow, or how things are going to go. And what a shame, you know, if when Bev passed in January, everyone obviously had their grief and were distraught. It was a tremendous loss, but the conviction to keep voices going and growing strong is still very much there, and I imagine will be long after you and I, because I think that's what a successful peer support group is going to do, is there isn't going to be somebody who pops up and is, you know, the leader, because, I mean, you need leaders, that's very important, but not the dictator leader, you know, that has everything carved in stone their way, and then when they're gone, suddenly the thing topples apart. And I think that's one of the problems in the past. You know, right now, because of the veterans and the NFL, you know, brain injury, the spotlight is on it like it's never been on it before. But I think a lot of the groups didn't stay together, and you and I talked about that earlier, that now brain injury is becoming a bigger label where they used to be in splinter groups before. You had your, and I called it earlier, a frat house mentality, where you had your TBIs, your ABIs, your tumors, your cancer, your Parkinson's, your MS, and all these different brain injuries, and they were all splintered into different groups, and you know, groups would fall apart. And when you pull the numbers together, you know, the brain is the brain, and we all have a unique story, but an awful lot of our residuals are the same. And by putting it under a bigger umbrella of brain injury, a couple things can happen. First of all, there's going to be more opportunity for more people to be involved in these groups to keep perpetuating and increasing, certainly. But it's also going to give us a bigger voter base. And I'm not going to get into the politics with you, but last week, and I don't even talk about politics on my show very much, but a couple things back to back came up last week that really had me challenging some of the things that are going on in healthcare right now. And, you know, I pointed out the fact that, you know, if there's, and we hear different numbers depending on what source you look at, but, you know, if there's whatever, 2.5 million brain injuries a year that are diagnosed, that means there's twice that many that are not. You take that times a few years, you got a lot of people out, constituents out there running around with brain injury. And if we pull together as a group instead of splintering apart, that's going to be a formidable number that does have a voice in the way things are run in the future. And I think that's the way to go myself. So,
it is an isolated injury.
Yes.
That you really do, you need your peers. And you need more groups like Voices, you know, people coming together to make a difference.
Yes, I agree. Well, let's see. I'm not seeing anybody with a question out there. I know we were having a little trouble with the switchboard earlier, but I know there's some of you out there in the chat room who are very active in peer-to-peer support and peer mentoring. Again, I'll give you one more chance before I let Carol get off to bed tonight, but the number is 424-243-9540. And you press 1 if you have a question or comment for Carol. In the meantime, make sure to check out braininjuryvoices.org. And if you ever doubt whether there's anything you can do to help because you feel kind of alone out there, certainly visit sites like this one, Brain Injury Radio, TBI Survivor Network, and, you know, see what other states are doing. And you can be the integral person that steps up and a mentor, you know, whether it's like Craig, like it was for we original hosts on Brain Injury Radio, or Beverly for Carol. I think once you become willing to step up, even if you don't have any idea, you know, how to do it or what you're going to do, that the minute you become willing to step up, I think it presents, you know, that it definitely presents itself. Someone presents themselves who is going to be that one to help mentor and lead you to the place that you need to be so that you're in the position to take the reins and go on. So I don't think that you ever have to fear, you know, that you're going to be the only one that shows up at the room, for example, because, you know, when one shows up, the others follow, and then they're comfortable with helping each other and mentoring each other, because, again, I think a good peer support mentor is going to want to create those that are going to be able to carry on that journey even better, even stronger, you know, than the early pioneers did, because they're going to learn more and have the renewed energy and take it even further. And I think this is one of those cases that you don't hear about very, you know, very often out in the world. You know, people will have different attitudes, but I think this is really a place where we want people to do bigger and better than we did.
Yes, yes. And I think it's just, it's so important to have goals and dreams, even with a disability, that it might take us longer. And I remember, because, you know, Bev Bryant was a national speaker, and I remember when my injury was maybe just a year or two old, I saw her speak, and I watched, and I said, I want to do that. And at that point, I barely had a half an hour of mental energy, and I had no idea how I was going to do that. But I said, I want to do that. Someday I want to give a speech like Bev does, you know. And then working with her, and she told me, she said, Carol, you're going to do a keynote. And at first I really didn't believe her, because my, you know, my endurance was so bad. I wanted to, but I really thought, no, I can do, you know, panels, I can do short talks, but I couldn't do a whole keynote. You know, but 5 years ago I did, and now I regularly do keynotes. And you know, now my goal is like her, to be a national speaker, to give my, you know, my keynote speech, Never Give Up on Happiness, on a national stage someday. And do I know how that's going to happen? No. But my hope is that if I keep, you know, doing the work that I'm doing, that the opportunity will come.
And I believe it will. You've had a great reception. I believe it will. And who knows, maybe somebody listening to the show tonight will be that conduit to get you up on that national stage. So I see we do have one person with a question. So let me unmute area code 402. You're on the air.
Yeah. I believe it will. And who knows, maybe somebody listening
You got it. You are. You have to turn down your speaker or put it on pause for just a minute so that it doesn't echo through the phone.
How do I do that?
Let me unmute area code.
Do you see over, are you looking at the show page?
Where
the line goes across that is the show to the left, it looks like on a tape recorder, two little lines that'll mute it. Or pause, I'm sorry, pause, like with a tape recorder.
Let's see, area code. Do you see,
or you can just turn down the volume all the way.
Can you do that?
Let's see, on the iPad, you've got a volume on the side where there's a plus and a minus. It's a little bar, and there's a plus and a minus, and you just keep clicking the minus, and you'll see it turning down the volume on your screen.
Or you can just turn down the volume all the way. Let's see, on the iPad, you've got a volume on the side where there's a plus and a minus.
Here, I'll hang on just 1 second. I'm going to put him on hold for just a minute. And that's kind of a surprise, actually. That's my dad, and he's in rehab right now, and don't know that I just put on his favorites, Brain Injury Radio. Don't know that he's been ever able to find us before, but you can either turn off the iPad, or if you look around the side perimeter of the iPad, there is, like I say, a little bar on there with a plus and a minus. And you just keep clicking the minus, and you'll be able to see that registering on your screen going down the little dots, like the volume is going down. So that's one way to do it, is turning your volume all the way down. And the other way to do it is if you're watching that thing that looks like a tape recorder where the line is going across, on the left side there should be a line that will pause the live show, and I will come right back to you there. I have one other hand up. Les Paul, is that you?
Yes, it is.
And I have been listening in the background. I got here right at the very beginning, and my phone rang, and someone called. So that's why I haven't been talking. I apologize for that.
Well, that's okay. Being the big peer mentor, peer support mentor that you are, I thought that you might want to weigh in and just say something to Carol before I let her go this evening.
You've got me where I forgot what you were saying just a minute ago, because I've been listening the whole time, but someone else was talking to me on the phone. Well, first of all, hello, and thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
What are some of the latest things you're working on? Because I only got to hear on and off pieces of it. I'm so sorry I didn't get to listen from the very get-go when I was already in before the show even started.
I saw that. Plus, you should check out braininjuryvoices.org. Carol will answer your question, but then they've got their mission statement, and I think you'll find that very compatible and relatable to what you do.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I have looked at that. I'd forgotten until you said that. And we just had 20 people train in peer support where I work at Walton Options for Independent Living, and it was amazing to watch 20 new peer supporters work in peer support and advocacy. So it really is paying it forward for other survivors. I can tell you work a lot to do that kind of thing for people all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because we've just come off a big project for the first part of the year. You're winning the hospital award for volunteer excellence, then raising the money,
wow,
and going to Washington, D.C. at the beginning of May. And receiving the award and meeting with our congressional representatives and the Brain Injury Association of America. And then after a little bit of a break, now we're now working on the Brain Injury Conference in Maine is in October, and we always do workshops.
Okay.
So we
That's
are working
awesome.
On a couple of workshops. One is going to be a tribute to Bev Bryant called Laughing While Learning, a tribute, the wisdom of Bev Bryant. Going to be using some of her writings, and I am going to give a speech in the style of Bev Bryant, because she was wonderful at taking funny stories and finding the learning from them. And so I'm going to share one of my own stories and share the wisdom that I've found from that. That's kind of my tribute to her.
That sounds wonderful.
We'll also do another workshop at the conference about finding one's voice. It's called Finding One's Voice. From standing up to standing out, about survivors go through.
Well, we talk about that on Brain Injury Radio a lot, how find your voice. And, you know, Craig Cecilia even wrote a song about finding your voice. And it's such a long journey for some and not as long for others. But, wow, mine was 17 and a half years of lost inside myself almost. And much like Kim went 17 and a half years with her, and 17 years with her aneurysm, the two of us have 30-something years between the two of us not knowing what to do and agencies turning us down and kind of laughing in our faces. But now we're getting the last laugh, I would say, and you too, because you're paying it forward for so many people. So I thank you for what you're doing very much.
Thank you.
Great. All right. Thanks, Les. I'm going to park you, and then I will come back to you, and we'll see if my dad figured out how to get his volume off. Are you there with me?
I did. I figured it out.
Well, good for you.
I threw it under the covers.
Carol, my dad is in rehab going through the big program. I think I talked to you about that earlier. He's been there a couple of weeks and with his Parkinson's and learning some of those compensation strategies that you were talking about earlier. And we were all talking about learning new technology that all of us have had to done. So I guess that is one compensation strategy we hadn't discussed, and that's throwing the computer under the covers if you can't get the volume down. So good. I'm glad that you called to contribute that tonight.
Thank you. I just wanted to really call and just compliment Carol on taking a very, very difficult, tragic situation and turning it into a very positive thing for not only herself, but all of the people that can now use her structured situation to help themselves and pay forward like that. As Les said, I just want to compliment you, Carol. You're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it a lot.
Kim, you're doing a good job, too. I love you.
Well, I love you, too. Thank you. And hope you're doing well there tonight.
I'm doing well just listening to you.
Okay, well, I'll bring you back, and I'm going to put you on hold for a moment. My East Coast guests, it gets to be pretty late for them. Let's see, we've got 20 till 11 here, so you're coming up on the bewitching hour, and I promised I wouldn't have you overstay so that you were too wiped out tomorrow, but I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight, Carol, and I concur with what Les and my dad, and also we had a couple different people in the chat room. In fact, one of our new hosts to be in August, Donna, wanted me to compliment you on your interview and what your group is doing in Maine. So let's send up some prayers and good thoughts that she gets to do that keynote speech, Never Give Up on Happiness. And this is Carol Starr is my guest tonight. And make sure to check out Brain Injury Voices. And if you think that you can make a difference, know that if you set your mind to it and you have the, what I call my acronym, the HOW of a program of recovery, which is honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, that will in fact happen for you. So Carol, thank you so much, and I hope that you will come back and join us again sometime soon.
I would love to do that very much.
Great. Well, thanks for being here, and stay in touch and let me know what's going on.
Will do. Thanks a lot.
All righty. Good night. Okay, I'll bring on some of you guests here in just a little bit, but since you were all bringing it up and I just happened to have it here, I'm going to play Find My Voice by our local indie musician, Daniel Christian. And this is really something that we're all trying to do when we go through a game changer event that is going to put our life on a different course for the rest of our life. And it's all about how we respond to this. But this is a great song, and I always get a little dry after the interview, so I'm going to grab my green tea. You guys kick off your shoes. We'll come back and do some open mic and play some indie music. If there's anything else you'd like to talk about that's on your brain tonight, be happy to unmute you. Again, our number is 424-243-9540. I'd like to thank our Brain Injury Radio sponsor, TBI Survivor Network. And I'd like to thank my Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing, out of North Carolina. Lash & Associates is the leading publisher on brain injury, blast injury, PTSD, and concussion. They've got a variety of material, and you'll know that all of their material is about brain injury, whether it's geared toward the survivor, the caregiver, the neuroprofessional, or other interested parties. And if you go to lapublishing.com, their website, again, that's lapublishing.com, you'll see a note for Brain Injury Journey. And that's a magazine that they created a year ago, April, comes out four times a year. When you click on that bar, Brain Injury Journey, you'll see that you can get a paid prescription of the subscription of the hard copy sent to your home, or the free, can't beat the price, online version. And I encourage you to do that. I think Janelle, one of their frequent contributors, is going to be a guest on my show next week, but in any case, just some wonderful material in the magazine, and it will get sent to you. The summer version, Hope, which is floating by on your screen, just came out, and there's some wonderful articles in there, so be sure to check them out. I've got one other note from the host on before me. The second and fourth Wednesday of each month, Lori Purdy Feitel, and she has a show called The Science of Happiness. Lori is very active in the 4-Peer-1-1 line, so I'm going to read you the memo she sent out and asked us to post around, but unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to do that, and so I've just been reading it on air. Do you know someone who has suffered brain injury, concussion, contusion, closed head injury, traumatic brain injury, acquired brain injury, anoxia, hypoxia, dementia, tumor, stroke, aneurysm, amnesia, Parkinson's disease, brain cancer? A survivor support line is now available to provide telephone support to those who suffer from all levels of brain impairment. The number 4-PEER, P-E-E-R, 1-1, is a survivor-run, funded, operated, and managed emotional helpline. We do not give medical advice, but we do have two compassionate ears. We have survived some form of brain injury, or we are a survivor who is significant in the life of a survivor. The number to call 4-PEER-1-1 is 855-473-3711, or if it makes it easier to remember, 855-4-PEER-1-1. Live operators are available from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If a call comes in when an operator is not free, please leave a message. Messages are returned on a regular basis. Again, that's 855-473-3711. Make sure to check out Lori's show, The Science of Happiness, on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month before my show. And on the first and third Wednesday of each month before my show is Dr. Robert Kluver, who has Parkinson's. He's down in the Phoenix area, is treated out of the Ali Center, and he has our show, Shaken Not Stirred, and his show is doing very well. So be sure to check out some of the other programming. Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week from, let's see, 8, 9, 10, from 7 to 10 Pacific Time, or 10 p.m. until 1 a.m. Eastern Time. We're the original 7, and we've been here about 2.5 years, and back in October, we started building an earlier platform, so it would be 5 o'clock Pacific, and, oh, God, I hate the math. Anyway, 5 o'clock Pacific, and then you figure it out yourself. This is your brain injury exercise for the night. And those shows are on for an hour and a half, and we have a really wonderful lineup. It's not 7 nights a week yet, but we do have it filled with some really great new hosts. And so make sure to tune into them. And now to get back to Find My Voice with Daniel Christian.
The question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Getting used to my own skin. Never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my
Daniel Christian, and you can find him at danielchristianmusic.com, or if you want to like him, and I always like it when you like these indies, you can find him on facebook.com/danielchristianmusic, and great guy, and he was a teacher, as a matter of fact, for a long time, and now he's one of the proud, he can actually make a living just doing his music. He's put out about 3 or 4 different CDs, and I think 4 CDs, and actually travels quite a bit, which I guess you have to be heard. Got some interesting guests coming up in future weeks. Let's see, who are they? Well, Dr. Bart Billings and Dr. Chris Ann Gordon are going to be on July 30th. He recently went, boy, he's got a jacket bio that you guys won't believe, as does she. And she is a doctor who suffered a TBI, another doctor becomes survivor, and he has a military record of about 43 years that is very impressive. Not only Colonel, retired now, Colonel Billings, but Dr. Billings. He's a neuropsychologist, and they are very resurrecting lives, as I believe that website. I'll double check you on that, but they are going to take a look at the issue of prescription medication and the effect that it's having on our veterans coming back. And that'll be a very good show. I know August 6th, Dr. Maria Romanes is coming back, and she's a repeat offender, she's a repeat wonderful guest that you guys have all really, really liked a lot. And I have to see what our topic's going to be this time, but she'll be back the 6th. And then Steve Almond is going to be on, and he hates the NFL. Imagine that. That's probably about the only sporting NFL show I would probably be having. I leave most of that up to the boys, but he is a writer for the New York Times and a very funny guy, and he's kind of gotten himself in the soup right now with this new book of his, and I think you're really going to enjoy him. So lots of good guests coming up, and I'll start unmuting some of you if you'd like. You need to remember to press 1 if you want to talk. The number is 424-243-9540. I might play another song. And let's see, what was it? Oh, yeah, I know. Pity he hung up. This would have really made him crazy if he's not. Nope, definitely not on the board. When I say Happy Hump Night, this is your host from somewhere in Middle America. A lot of people say, well, where is that? We know that Les is from South Carolina and Matt's from Indiana, but where is that host who says she's from somewhere in Middle America? Where is that anyway? And I usually answer now a tradition on my show with this. So that might give you a little clue where this host is from, Omaha, Nebraska. That's from a parody done by Jeremy Partridge, a two-time We Thank You for Your Service veteran from Iraq. The other night, since we don't have anybody jumping up with their hand, don't think I can entertain yourselves for the rest of the show. The other night, Saturday night, I was pinch hitting, and we wound up, it was going to be open mic and indie music, but it wound up being a show on acceptance. And I've gotten a lot of good feedback on that spur of the moment Saturday show on acceptance. And so that might be something that you'd like to tune into if, in fact, you think you might have something to accept. But that night, I thought we might be getting through that topic in the three-hour show, and we actually didn't. It kept going. A lot of people could really relate. But I said that one of the things I was going to talk about on that show, and let me see if I can find it. It's out of Neurology Now, their current edition, and it had to do with too much computer time. It's an article called Game Theory, How Do Video Games Affect the Developing Brains of Children and Teens? And I told you I wasn't going to read you the whole article, and I'm not even going to read you the article, but I was just going to read you a couple of things you might find of interest. I found them very interesting. There are two lists, and the first list is, do you have a computer addiction? Or a gaming addiction. but I think some of you will see the irony in what I read. The following warning signs may indicate a problem. Number one, spending excessive amounts of time on the computer. Two, becoming defensive when confronted about it. Three, losing track of time. Four, preferring to spend more time with the computer than with friends or family. Five, losing interest in previously important activities or hobbies. Six, becoming socially isolated, moody, or irritable. Seven, establishing a new life with online friends. Ha, your virtual reality, right? Neglecting schoolwork and struggling to achieve acceptable grades. Or, if you're an adult, I suppose that could apply to your job or what you volunteer at. Spending money on unexplained activities and attempting to hide your activity. Well, believe it or not, like I said, this article is on excessive use of gaming or being on the computer too much, and whether it's gone from, you know, a resource and a nice hobby that you do to where it's become an addiction and it's actually detrimental instead of helpful in your life. And as I was reading through that list, I realized that those 10 things are the key markers for addiction of any kind. So if you're out there and you're taking medication for your brain injury and you're drinking alcohol along with that, or you're self-medicating by maybe thinking if one is good, two or three might work a little better of your prescription medication. Let's see, that would be a couple things. What else? Your computer, obviously, that's what this is about. But you pretty well go across the board on those 10, and those are the key points that indicate whether a person has an addiction or not. So let's keep it on the article for a minute about the computer and gaming, because the other list I was going to read you, and then I will move off of this topic and unmute some of you, is Gaming, A Parent's Guide. With news about video games turning kids into bullies or zombies, and a growing number of experts warning about the dangers of too much screen time, it may be tempting to ban computers and smartphones altogether. Don't, say experts. If you forbid gameplay, you'll forfeit any opportunity to influence your children's behavior. A better approach, play with them, says Judy Willis, MD, a neurologist and member of the American Academy of Neurology based in Santa Barbara, California, who suggests starting with free online educational games. The key to ensuring your children have a healthy relationship with video games, and yes, there is such a thing, means ensuring they take advantage of pleasurable experiences outside these games. A few tips. Pay attention. According to Dr. David Greenfield, PhD, founder of the Center for Internet and Technology Addiction and assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of Connecticut School of Medicine, 80% of the time a child spends on the computer has nothing to do with academics. Putting computers, smartphones, and other gaming devices in a central location and not behind closed doors allows you to monitor their activities. Learn how to check the computer's search history to confirm what your child has been doing on the Internet. Establish boundaries. Set and enforce limits on on-screen time. Kids are often unable to accurately judge the amount of time they spend gaming. Further, they are unconsciously reinforced to stay in the game, says Dr. Greenfield, who recommends no more than 1 or 2 hours of screen time on weekdays. Taking advantage of firewalls, electronic limits, and blocks on cell phones and internet sites can help. Start talking. Discuss internet use and gaming early on with your kids. Set clear expectations to help steer them in a healthy direction before a problem begins. Communication doesn't necessarily mean a formal talk. Rather, it's about giving your child an opportunity to share their interests and experiences with you. Know your kid. If your child is doing well in the real world, participating in school, sports, social activities, then limiting gameplay may not be as important. The key, say experts, is maintaining a presence in their lives and being aware of their interests and activities. On the other hand, if you have a kid who already has anger issues, you might want to limit violent games, suggests Tom A. Hummer, Ph.D., assistant research professor in the Department of Psychiatry at Indiana University School of Medicine in Indianapolis. Get help. For some young people, gaming becomes an irresistible obsession. If your child is showing signs of a video game addiction, help is available. Treatment options range from limited outpatient therapy to intensive residential boarding schools and inpatient programs. So, and then there's this article goes on to talk about the developing brain on games. And in case you were wondering what this has to do with brain injury, addiction, I think, is something that often, or obsessive compulsive behaviors even, I think a lot of times come out of a brain injury situation. But addictions are something we all have to be careful of, particularly if we're on prescription medication or in a place in our head sometimes because of these changes that we've gone through and how difficult it is to deal with them and adjust, that we might be, again, self-medicating can become a problem. So in any case, that was in Neurology Today magazine, and thought it was pretty interesting list of tips to watch for addiction in yourself and family, friends. Maybe not that you can do anything about it unless they're willing, but maybe steer them in the right direction or at least have an awareness of what's going on. And always remember to keep balance in your life. There's, you know, I know a lot of people who perhaps because of mobility issues or attitude, confidence issues, spend a lot of time on the computer, and their whole life becomes the interaction that they have on the computer, and the real world becomes the virtual world and vice versa. And you know, our lives were spared. Some of us have had the opportunity to know that our lives have been spared more than once, and it just doesn't make sense, at least to this survivor, that would be to crawl into a virtual world. I must be needed in the real world. And so while I can have some fun and we even have some brain injury related apps that you can buy out there, I can't think of what they're called, the two famous ones that give you brain games and help you keep sharp and all that, you always want to keep a balance in your life. So certainly get more tech savvy. That is the wave of the future, and it's a way to find a wealth of information at your fingertips, at your ease. But it can also be a way to crawl out of the reality of your life and use as a way to not deal with your life because you're so engrossed in that one. So with that little tidbit, you guys still have the opportunity to call in and speak if you want, or I'm just going to keep playing you some indie music when I'm back into my numbers, I guess. Okay, since Les isn't talking tonight, I'm afraid I'm just going to have to play my indie artist who is my first. She is the trailer, my book trailer. Right after I wrote my book, I found out you had to have a trailer, for God's sake. I thought that was something you wrote in on vacation. I knew movies had them, but I didn't know books had them, so I figured out how to do that. That's where I first came in contact with Leah West. For those of you that have seen the video, on my website, inaflash.org, there's a little trailer. In fact, it says trailer. And it's a short video using this lady's song that I first heard, and it's something I believe that we all have, and it kind of became my trademark song, both for my book and my song that I play on my way out of the show. But this is the other song that Les and I really like right now. Oh, now I see you put your hand up. Well, you're just going to have to wait now to hear your girl, Les, your other girl, your virtual girl, because we know you got a real girlfriend. But here's Leah West. You can find her at leahwest.com or facebook.com/LeahWest. And this is Speechless, something you don't find me very often. That was Speechless by Leah West. Again, you can find her at leahwest.com or like her on Facebook. And she is a doll, a real light of spirit, and her music and attitude reflect it. Hi, Les.
Hello. This is Wes Paul. How are you doing tonight? I've been out in space tonight. I'm sorry. Even my typing looks like somebody on drugs, and I am on drugs, like medication the doctor gives me, so it's not illegal.
No.
Oh.
Yeah,
boy.
I was stuttering. I was hitting double letters there for a second when I was doing it. I didn't have my reading glasses, and I was kind of dragging my fingers, so I was okay, I'm stuttering in the chat room.
I took my glasses off just because I couldn't read anyway. That's how I felt today. This has been a really long day for me, but it's been a good one. But at work today, I was so tired when I got to work, I said, man, did I sleep? I could not remember if I slept or not. You ever had such short-term memory? You do not remember going to bed? I don't know what time I went to bed the night before. All I know is I went to work saying, ugh, me heavy. I don't feel good. I just felt tired all day. Then I came home after drinking a cup of coffee, which upset my stomach, and drank two glasses of tea.
I'm
go ahead.
Trying to turn. I've got my blueberry pomegranate green tea tonight. I'm trying to take a day. We were just reading about addiction. I'm trying to see if I can get through the day without a sweet tea, since that's become my summer of 14 addiction. The sweet tea.
Well,
the year of the sweet tea.
When you were talking about addictions, I used to love to play my game systems. I've had several different game systems all the way back from Atari back in the day. The ColecoVision, which was another one back in the day. And then what was the next one? I had another Atari that was called the Atari 5200. The other one was 2600. And I used to play those things all the time when I was a lot younger. And as time kept going on, I found myself slowly drifting away from them. And then when I first got my first computer, I started saying, wow, I'm going to mess with this. And it took me about 5 years. I hardly ever turn on my game systems at all. But you made me feel guilty when you're saying whatever your addiction is, because I feel like I'm on the computer so much at work, at home, in between, that I wonder what is an addiction sometimes, because we do get on our computers a lot. Our assistive technology, our devices.
Right. Well, I do have I do have a cell phone, but I tried to say it on the air, but I need to tell people that just get a hold of me, too. I don't get my Facebook and my email on my telephone. I do have a smartphone, but I can't do all of that. Like when
Facebook
I'm out.
Is fun.
It is fun, but I understood. I understood because I have an addictive personality from the moment I saw it, that would be something that could become problematic, and I refused to let that take my life. And so I check my Facebook twice a day, and so those of you that send me messages know I'm not ignoring you, that I check it twice a day, but it does not come to my phone, and my email doesn't come to my phone, and it's just the way that I try to manage my information overload. It's enough, that I learned to text, for God's sake, because now there's phone call pings and texting pings, and when I'm out on a beautiful day like today, first of all, with the top down, I couldn't hear it anyway, and there's so few of those days in the Middle West this time of year, until fall, it's usually so hot and humid that, I have the top up in the, it's really a spring fall car for me, because when it's too hot or too cold, it just doesn't work out. But today was one of those picture perfect days, and tomorrow's supposed to be too. And yeah, I'm going to just practice gratitude a day at a time, because next week it's supposed to be like 95 and 80% humidity again, and that's the way it was like a week or two ago, and I just felt sick through the whole time, so I'm not even going to project that now or live in the past of that a couple weeks ago. All I can say is today
no
was beautiful.
Yesterday, you're in the now.
That's right. I'm into now, and I had an appointment I had to make it to, and then I ran out to in the convertible, which it was relaxing to visit my dad for a little bit. He's quite a ways away from home, but I had to turn around and get back because finally, thank you, God, we've been in our house a little over a month, and the last window coverings I was waiting for. Our neighbors have gotten to know us real well because we didn't have window coverings on our windows for so long. And then they started coming a dribble at a time, you know, from the window covering guy. I keep calling him the blind guy, but he's not blind, except I did want to wrap a blind around his neck a time or two, I got to tell you. But he came to at 4 o'clock to put up the very last, and they're the ones that are the front, like, bay window thing where there's a window seat, so the big window, and then down the same wall a little further, the dining area, it's one big room, had white plantation shutters on them. So I thought about you, because that was kind of a southern thing, having plantation shutters, and that was my first, now maybe my fourth urge for a sweet tea today.
Uh-oh.
And I finally, though, I got out my healthy stuff that I had been drinking before I started drinking the sweet tea. I've been drinking my blueberry pomegranate Trader Joe's green tea all evening, so I'm missing that sugar about now. Man, I hate addictions. Are so fun to get into and such a bear to get out of, you know, sometimes,
except, man.
You know, and so today I would have hated to be inside on the computer all day, you know,
exactly,
I mean, look at all
yeah.
the things I would have missed. And like that day I took the picture of all the roses. I only had 20 minutes and a pass-through, but I was so glad that I did, because when I uploaded those to Facebook that day, I was like, look how long it's been, because I climbed into a house, not a computer, but same difference, you know, to the exclusion of a lot of other things in my life, and then going to the facilities and everything, and getting to see those roses, and
mm-hmm.
driving through, you know, the corn is really tall right now here in the Husker Nation.
Oh,
they're
going
to start
it is.
Doing something with it. So there's fields and fields of corn, because he's way out there and I'm in the city. And so on that drive out there, I get to see what's left of lots of cornfields out there. And it was just beautiful, you know, just a beautiful day, probably 80 degrees or so. And it was sunny, but a lot of big white pillowy clouds and stuff out there. So it was just cool enough, a beautiful day for a convertible, and to get the last of the window coverings and eat real quick and do a show. So it's
sounds
been
like a daydream kind of a day, like the song "What a Day for a Daydream."
Yeah. Now the only thing that could have been even more fun, and it's on its way. We have a hammock, but it was weird. We've got a hammock that's hardly ever used in a brand new hammock. And at our old house, we had a row of big pine trees, and two of them had a hook in them. And so the hammock, you know, went under the trees and hooked on the trees. Well, here we don't have that. So we're like, it would be really nice. We have just one big tree. We had tons of trees in the other one. I'm going to have to start over here. But anyway, we needed to get a hammock stand, and so that's supposed to be coming tomorrow, and we're hoping. I don't know if they all come in different sizes or, you know, if that's going to work out or not, but I hope it's nice, because on a day like today, it would have been nice to just lay on a hammock maybe with a sweet tea and let the dogs jump up and swing with me and just kind of kick back and relax a little bit. But yeah, days like that are kind of priceless, and I wouldn't want to be stuck. If it was my last day, I wouldn't want to have been stuck on my computer on Facebook.
Do you realize what you just described?
What?
A very beautiful day from a brain injury survivor's point of view, and it was still a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. And that's a very big statement you just made, whether you know it or not. I didn't mean to change subjects at all. It's actually about how you describe the day. You described a very beautiful day, and you've had a lot of trauma. And that's beautiful. I'm so glad you did that. And for everybody listening, if you're going through a lot of trouble and trauma, I almost said trouble, it's your chance and your turn to see the beauty in life, even after a brain injury or an aneurysm or any disability. And I was listening how you were describing things, that how it was such a beautiful day, and you've been having a lot of stress lately, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, the last 60 days has been hell on wheels. In fact, I got one of those, what do you call that? You're the one that taught me what it is, but that pinprick, the headache, it's like a pinprick right above my left eyebrow.
An ice pick migraine?
Yeah, that. I have that going on. And it's been a couple of days now, but tonight it's been really nasty. And so one of the things I've learned to do, because otherwise it gets really hard to not get, you know, depressed, you know, when you've got a lot of stuff and you're in pain a lot of the time, is one of the tools that I've learned to use is gratitude, you know, just looking for the things in each day that I can be grateful for and trying to focus on those. And today, I certainly whine when it's too hot or too cold. And so I had to give it its due today that it was just, if every day could be like this, it would be nirvana, perfect temperature for me.
It was perfect.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was perfect. What was it like in South Carolina?
Hot and hot. And did
uh-oh.
I say hot? It wasn't that bad, though. It was a beautiful sunny day.
You did say hot. Sorry, forgive me, audience, but that reminded me that I'd really like a couple of these Advil to kick in before I go to bed tonight. Okay.
We lost you.
Yes. Sorry, I have to get back to my mic. Have you got me back?
Yes.
Kinda. Good.
Yes.
I'm moving closer to my power source. Sorry, I had to unplug and run and get Advil. I said I wanted to have a couple Advil kick in before I go to bed, and I decided to break down because we've been talking about addiction. I'm weak. I'm in the human skin. I'm weak. So I'm going to crack this sweet tea and wash my Advil down with it.
No, not the sweet tea. No.
Yes. Oh, God, my addictions are so terrible these days, aren't they? Just I can feel my pants getting tighter, and it's not because of what I'm eating, I'll tell you that. My meals have been messed up because of my schedule's been messed up. And, you know, when your routine gets thrown off, lots of stuff, your sleep, you know, my sleep, eating.
I was talking about the genetically altered fruit and vegetables, like the watermelon that I told you that would not break down after 2.5 to 3 weeks, it never broke down and stayed pink the whole time. Bugs were not on it at all. In my backyard, laying on the ground, busted open, bugs would not walk on it. And it just floored me. Flies, insects get on watermelons regularly. They jump all over them and eat all over them.
Oh,
and
I know.
And dissolve the thing. This thing is 3 weeks old and it's still not completely gone. Well, now think about your watermelon. I mean, not watermelon. I got watermelon in the brain. Your sugar. It's genetically altered, too.
Oh, crap. Not the sugar, but it's pure cane. It's pure cane GMO sugar.
I just had to tease you with that. But
crap.
Well.
Yeah, no, this is the pure cane sugar, not the common variety granular stuff. That must make a difference. Yeah, I'm sure the GMO sugar, that's probably what's given me a headache. It's probably like too much caffeine. I have had more sugar because of the sweet tea than if I was eating cupcakes every day. So I don't know. That might have something to do with it. I'm going to have to take a look at that and cut back on these things even more and be drinking more of my Trader Joe tea, see if I can find that balance, because I do drink coffee, not all day, but just in the morning, a few cups.
Okay.
I've got to have it to reboot, or I just don't function very, very well in the morning. I always wake up stiff and in pain, and I'm a slower mover in the morning, which is really ironic because I used to be the kind that when I used an alarm, that it went and I hit the floor running, you know? I mean,
wow.
The thing was barely done ringing and I hit the floor running and was on the race for the day, and now I'm just a sluggish Model T in the morning. I'm really bad in the morning.
Today, if there would have been a gun anywhere near me, I would have shot my alarm clock. I didn't want to hear it. I was mad at it. Please stop ringing at me, please. And I didn't feel like getting up. I'm saying, ugh.
Yeah,
I had a very hard time getting up today.
I don't, well, yeah, see, you need to. I don't, as a rule, I don't use my alarm clock anymore. I just kind of go through my process. Sometimes I wake up at 8:30, and sometimes, gosh, I've woken up on some of these days, especially when it was so hot and humid and I was running quite a bit, had a lot more in my basket to deal with. I'd maybe wake up at 10 or 10:30 and almost have that panic, you know, that I had done something. But I had probably also been up, you know, doing something that has to do with this till, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning,
yeah,
or something,
yeah,
the night before. Because sometimes after the show, you're tired, but you're not ready to close your eyes and go to sleep that second, you know, because you've been jazzed for 3 hours,
like,
you know,
me.
So you wind down, you know, after the show and stuff. So anyway, yeah, that's pretty wild. So
go ahead.
Yeah, no, please, go ahead.
I was going to say that goes with the time management of TBI, which is hard to find. It's hard to stay concentrated with TBI. It's hard to stay focused. It's hard to keep up with what list is where and who's doing what. And by the way, what did I forget a minute ago? Where is this at? Where is that? And then oh, hello? Oh, I forgot to call you yesterday when he answered the telephone. And then, then you finally say, okay, I think I've got it right. I don't know why all these people are calling me. And you sit down, and the phone goes off again and says, Les, why aren't you at work? this isn't my day off, is it? Go fly down the road in the car. I've done all of the things I just said before.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
What having a brain injury and a disability can do to you. You get confused sometimes. We do it without also. I remember my brother Phil was just sitting in the house one day, and he was supposed to be at a very important meeting. He didn't have a disability, but and he says, Les, how come you're sitting here? And I said, I want to know why you're here. And he's at our house. And he said, I just came on over. I just couldn't figure out why. And I said, why aren't you at work on Monday morning? I thought that's what you usually do, and it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. He said, this isn't Monday. This is Sunday. I said, no, this is Monday. No, it's not. And he kept saying the same thing over and over. I said, no, this is Monday. It's Sunday. Mom, what day is this? This is Monday, Phil. Why are you here?
Oh.
He took off on the road in his car. Oh, my goodness. I had an important meeting, and he got chewed out about it. He completely forgot it, came over and visited us. I think it was Sunday.
Oh,
it can
no.
happen to all of us.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It can.
And that's where the people that don't have a TBI go, oh, I have the same thing. I hear that all the time. I don't know about you, but I say I have really bad headaches. Oh, I do too. No, you don't know. These are deep, deep, deep. Oh, I have migraines too.
Uh-huh.
I'm not talking about regular migraines. Well, I have them. And I don't. If I say I forgot something and I'm really forgetting very bad, oh, I do that all the time. And you hear somebody just say it over and over and over. Whatever you say, they've got it too, no matter what. And then you, okay, I want you to describe what you're talking about, because I don't think you know what I'm saying. the deep field of forgetfulness that's in brain injury and different levels with everybody, and the deep levels of pain we go through, deep levels of pain you've been through and several people have been on here. I mean, it's amazing we're functioning and talking right now and that the people are actually listening who have brain injuries also. People don't realize how deep it gets sometimes and the depression that can come with it.
Yeah, it's hard to wake up in pain. I mean, every day for 20 years, you know, I've woken up in pain. Sometimes it's easier than others to put on a game face and go out and do what I need to do. But like I said, I've just had to really focus on gratitude. It'd be easy to, you know, just stay in, but lucky I didn't hurt my head, but I tripped on a dog bone last night in the dark, and instead of falling down, I hit right where the walls come together, you know, into a point with my forearm, and I hit it really hard with my forearm to the place where the nerve that shoots up into your elbow and down into your hand. Yeah. I thought for sure I was going to have like the biggest bruise today, and I didn't. It just hurts, and my elbow hurt, and my forearm hurt, and my fingers have been tingly all day. But, you know, I think I also jerked because I did that as a desperate fling to not fall further, you know, when I caught my arm on that thing. And my neck has been so stiff all day, and I think that helped contribute to the headache, you know, to that.
I'm sure it did. You described how brain... Go ahead.
That's all.
I was just going to say you described how brain injuries happen just then. Sometimes someone trips on a tennis shoe that's laying in front of them and they're not paying attention. And next thing you know, they're going onto the hardwood or cement floor or whatever it is, maybe into the basement, and crack their head. And they live or they die, or their life is forever changed. That's another face of brain injury that people say, I'm not going to have a brain injury in my own house. It happens a lot. It does. It happens down a level of two or three steps. A lady that was 60 years old came into my office one day about a month ago, and she could barely walk, and she looked dazed and confused, and her husband brought her in to see me, and I didn't even know what was going on. And she said, where's Mr. Morgan? And I said, I'm Mr. Morgan. I believe I'm the one you're looking for. And she told me she tripped on two steps and fell and was badly bruised all over, and she bruised her brain. Two steps. Mm. And this was a senior citizen. And she said, I just lost my balance as I started to take my first step. And so she's really forgetful and in a lot of pain in her head. And I talked to her for a long time and told her some doctors that I know that deal with that kind of pain and what she needs to do, and told her first thing she needs to go is straight to the doctor's office, neurosurgeons at a level one trauma center and be examined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to talk about the importance of a level one trauma center on here a lot of times, because some hospitals, you'd go into the hospital in what looks like an emergency situation and the person's bleeding in their brain, and they have you sitting there for 6 or 7 hours while the rest of the people are being treated for cuts.
Yep.
And the person dies.
Yep.
It really happens that way.
I know, especially in this day and age with what's going on in the emergency rooms. I got enough to talk about a whole other show some night. I was visiting with a doctor today, a homeopath doctor, and talking about some of that stuff I was talking about a couple weeks ago about corporations being in charge of the treatment plan now instead of the doctor and the patient, and some of the shifts that are being made. And I talked to a guy today about that, and he told me some even more stuff that wasn't good news. But interesting discussion, though. Another document that's being signed that's going to make it difficult for something like an 11,000 page document again, and the first 500 have to do with making, I guess it was on a Huckabee show, if anybody watches that, but this document will be coming. Yeah, he's got a show on Fox News, but I guess the first 500 pages are going to make it more difficult for Medicare people to deal. So that'll be coming down the pike. We'll try to hear more about that, but I won't talk about politics tonight. If anyone wants to call in, we got about a little less than 30 minutes left in the show. I notice a lot of you have been on the switchboard tonight. I appreciate all of you who are out there listening and contributing and supporting Brain Injury Radio. All of us hosts appreciate that, like to feel like we're making a difference, and we know that you make a difference to us. The number to call in is 424-243-9540. And press 1 if you want to talk. Otherwise, I will assume that you're listening. Unless you're like Les, who thought he pushed 1, but he didn't earlier.
I really did think I did.
I know. So you guys on the switchboard, if you, as my grandpa would have said, if you want to talk out there, make sure to press 1, because that signals us back here in the back room that you have what we call in the trades your hand up. And so we'll take a look at that. Let's see, what do we have on the song board tonight that I haven't played for a while? How about, let's go down to... Oh, here's a couple of those that I wish now Brandy could have found her way back. She's been having trouble with her computer after that. Brandy, who was new to the chat, had struggled a long time to find her way into the chat. She said she hasn't been able to get back in the last couple of times. She thinks it's a problem with her computer, but she was the one who wanted some instrumental music, and I found her some instrumental music. But since she's not here right now, she might be out there listening, I hope, but this is somebody I haven't played for a while. They're my Naughty Joysy Boys, Francis Jones and the Saviors, and this is I Want to Be With You.
Alright, we're going to do this.
I'd be if I was wrong, but now bones, where the bullies and thrills wear off. It's unknown pastures and unknown loves, great wonder, wanderer's bones. Yeah, we tried, now we see, we don't want what we see, just the knowledge found in the unknown. But now I wanna be with you.
Yeah, that was Francis Jones. You can find him at www.francisjones.bandcamp.com or facebook.com/dr.francisjones. And he's a really great guy. Did a musical show one night, and a lot of these indie musicians showed up in person to say hi to everybody and give a little backstory on one of their songs. Francis Frank is actually his name. He was actually doing a concert. He was in concert, but wanted so much to be on the show that in between sets he came out. It was a little noisy in the background, but it's a thought that counts. He joined us on Brain Injury Radio, and I thought that was pretty cool of him to do. Area code 831, you're on the air with Kim. Who do we have?
Anthony.
Anthony!
Yeah. I was thinking about the addiction thing. Well, first of all, the memory thing. But after I fell rock climbing, my climbing partner came to see me, and I was having severe short-term memory problems. And so he came to see me, and he said, now remember this green dot, and then we'd launch into the conversation, and he started to say, now what color was that car? Yellow? No. White? No. Red? No, it was green. Oh, yeah, that's right. What kind of car is it? Ford? No, it's foreign. A Fiat? No. And we do that over and over, for like 3 weeks after I came out of my coma. And then it started to cement. You know, my memory came back. And actually, I think a lot of it was due to my schooling, because I had to remember stuff. I couldn't write it down, so I had to remember. I had no choice in the matter. And when I did, I could have really wiped out, but I chose not to do that. I was thinking, well, I'm going to have to work on my memory a lot. And so that's what I did. But back to the addiction. You know, it's really easy to slip into a pattern and you don't even realize what you've done.
Yes, it is. Denial is the number one symptom of addiction, as a matter of fact. So people often slide into it without being aware until they're in the thick of it.
Yeah, and I was like, I slipped into it like, how did this happen? Well, it happened. But anyway, I'd like drink, I would get, you know, Costco quantity of beer, which is minimum 24 bottles. And I'd have a couple of beers and never lop it. And it's just nothing. I was like kind of bummed from my voice and drinking beer and being bummed. And, wait a second, what am I doing? I need to be proactive. I need to work on my voice and actually hearing Les Paul talking, him saying how the karaoke stuff really pulled his voice around, made him a lot more understandable, and he sounds totally normal. And it's like, that's something that I'd like to aspire to, and that is something I am going to aspire to. And I'll get there eventually, but it's going to take a while. And that's just the way it goes.
Well, the hope, you know, the hope is there, and you've been progressing right along. And so, you know, stay at it. They say if it's not broke, don't fix it. Well, in your case, the things that you're doing to better your situation and the positive action that you're willing to take and stick to and your willingness and determination have made a marked difference that we've all been able to witness here on the show. So just keep doing what you're doing. You're doing great.
And also, I am addicted to the computer to talk to you guys because I've had there's no support on the West Coast that I'm aware of. And Ron Santa Cruz, maybe there is, and I don't know where it is, but I'm thinking, well, I need to work on this, taking the quote bull by the horns and making a group happen if there's not one and there isn't. And yeah, I mean, it's like every couple weeks and then they're often canceled. And it's like, well, what about, I mean, do other people, do other people have brain injuries and want to talk to smaller folks? I think so. I mean, you know, I'm not unique. I didn't survive this because I'm just, you know, Mr. Fantastic. I survived this because the doctors knew what they're doing and I was damn lucky. And
yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's wonderful. We just got a couple minutes left in the show, but no, I don't think there's anything wrong. I too got addicted to us when we first started. I was on all 7 nights a week for months and months and months and months, and then I did get to a point where I did need to take a couple nights off because I, about that time, was starting to pick up that Saturday show as a, you know, doing 2 weekly shows myself. You know, I kind of needed to take a little bit of a break, so I'm not there every, you know, 7 nights a week now. But still, I know what you mean because I was for the longest time. But I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, a few hours a night. It would be one thing if you crawled into your computer, you know, 24/7 to the point where it was making problems in your life, like you weren't eating or sleeping or doing anything else in your life besides that. You know, in this context, it's peer support, and as long as that isn't the total of your life, then I think it enhances your life. And I'm always really happy to have you, and I know the other hosts are as well. So I've got to scoot out. I'm sorry, but thank you for calling in, Anthony. We got just a couple of minutes left. Brandy, I didn't realize she was listening on the telephone. I missed her in the chat room. Brandy is somebody, a welcome new regular like Anthony, and it took her a while to find the chat room, and then she finally found the mastery and the good feeling about being able to find the chat room, and then her darn computer was having problem, and she mentioned to me one night she liked instrumental music, and so I found some instrumental music, and I've played you Velasquez the last couple of nights, and he's one of the newest people, I guess, on my playlist. But one of them, gosh, and I just had him right here. I hope he didn't disappear. What's his name? Find him quick. I had it on this fellow I was going to play for you. Oh, yes, here, Donovan Johnson. So I'm going to send this out to Brandy tonight. Glad she made it to the chat room just in time to hear an outro. And I look forward to seeing you guys all next week or around the boulevard in the chats, through the weekend. And I will probably be back on Saturday. Yay, right? A different structure of show. Wednesday night is usually the show that has the guests and the interviews and the one I work hard on. And Saturday night has kind of become open mic night in indie music. We hosts work really hard all week to do these shows for you guys. And so on Saturday nights, I've just decided that you guys are going to bring the show to us. Like last week, I brought a backup topic in case plan A didn't work. I wanted a plan B, and that worked out fine. But in any case, that's kind of what you're looking at on Saturdays now. If you have something on your mind, something you'd like to hear us talking about or just want to take the opportunity to chime in on a more laid-back night, then do call in on Saturday. And I'm going to close the show tonight with Donovan Johnson. And this is something we all need to ultimately find serenity in our life, whether it's toward ourselves or others in our life, people, places, or things. And it's a song called Forgiveness. So good night, everybody, and God bless.